With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
All right, what's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of the Buffalo Beat. My name is Joe Pascalia. Thanks, everyone, for jumping on the weekly live room episode that we've got. It's a lot of fun each and every week where I get to see what's on your mind as it pertains to what is happening with the Bills that week, and certainly the Bills' upcoming game against the Cowboys, a big one, especially after the Cowboys just did the thing that the Bills almost did right before their bye week, and that was to beat the Philadelphia Eagles. The Cowboys coming in with a lot of success over their last seven games. And you look at how many points that they have scored throughout those seven games, averaging over 38 points a game. And that includes a loss in there. But over their last five, averaging over 40. So the Bills have their hands full, no doubt, in this matchup with the Cowboys. And I'm excited to get through a lot of the matchups with you. And by all means, if you have any questions, go ahead. And you know the drill by now. Type them up in the Athletic app right here on your screen, and I will get to as many as I can up until the point in which I need to leave to go to Sean McDermott's press conference at 11:15 over in Orchard Park. So by all means, fire away, and the Bills, it should be a really fun game, and we'll get to our prediction near the end of the game as well. All right, first question comes from Grant, who writes, "Hey Joe, the Cowboys defense has faced some injuries over the course of the season, but still remain a strong unit overall. What area of their defense presents the biggest opportunity to exploit on Sunday for the Bills?" It's interesting that you bring that up, Grant, because that's kind of one of the that's what I was just about to start writing for my preview for my weekly column over at The Athletic. I think an area that the Bills can potentially try to exploit is if the Cowboys believe that they can just stick Stephon Gilmore on Stephon Diggs one-on-one and worry about the rest of the Bills' offense with the rest of their defense. Now, teams have done a really nice job on Diggs over the last, you know, 3-4 weeks here, where they have effectively taken him out of some of the big money plays for the Bills. And I do wonder if that continues or if the Cowboys, who like to effectively go in a, from what Josh Allen said, effectively go into a man-to-man defense on third downs, if they'll think to themselves that Gilmore, because he has done the job for a long time throughout his career, can do the same against Diggs on those third down opportunities. And if that is the case, I think that is something for the Bills to potentially exploit. And, you know, you can tell Diggs, he said himself on Thursday that he was a little bit frustrated just based on his, how defenses have prevented him from being able to get truly involved, but it's not to the point where he's like frustrated beyond belief with the organization or because he's not getting the ball. I don't think that's the case. I think it's just natural, general frustration, like because you want to be able to be the one that that puts up the yards, puts up the catches, puts up the points for the team. And with Diggs being the top guy on the roster by a lot at receiver, you know, I think that certainly means a lot to him to be that player for them. So I think that's more the source of the frustration than anything else. But the defense have done a nice job. So that's one area that I'm looking to, like, okay, maybe the Bills can get themselves going. I did notice with their other corner, Deron Bland, he is a good player by all means, and he has 8 interceptions on the year, 6 defensive touchdowns on the season, which is ridiculous and something that he will likely, very likely, strongly likely never do again in his career in a single season. But I think there are some opportunities there against some quicker twitch receivers on the Bills roster to maybe shake loose in the intermediate area for, you know, just these chain moving gains, like 7 to 9 yards, things like that. I think that would be one spot that I could look to. And it really all depends how they play Diggs, because if they have Gilmore traveling with Diggs all over the place, then odds are Bland is going to wind up with Gabe Davis. And I don't really love that matchup for the Bills, because I don't think Gabe Davis is the super quick twitch receiver that I'm talking about. But say they have Diggs go inside to slot, and that may force a decision by the Cowboys as to whether or not to have Gilmore travel, because then you could work yourself into a spot where maybe someone that they don't want to be covering Gabe Davis ends up in the game against him. And then you, on the other side, if they're an 11 personnel, which a lot of times that they are, that could wind up allowing a guy like Khalil Shakir or Deontay Hardy, who are a little bit of that quicker twitch that I'm talking about, to be able to wiggle free against Bland. And by all means, this isn't like a phrase to say Deron Bland has been bad this year. It's just like these little micro opportunities that I think they could have to keep things going and things like that. But if they don't have Gilmore travel with Diggs, then I think that in itself is an opportunity to have Diggs be a little bit more effective over the middle of the field and get more involved in that capacity. So there's a few ways for them to go about this. I do think they're going to continue to try and establish the run with James Cook. I mean, if you listen to my post-game show or read my observations column after the Chiefs game, the Bills have to get James Cook more involved than just 45% of snaps. That was a tight game, and they wanted to get Ty Johnson some reps. They wanted to get Latavius Murray some reps. But at the same time, James Cook is their best running back by a mile. He is the guy that they have been looking to get going in a big way, and a guy with the type of skill set that they have coveted at the running back position for quite some time here. And to only utilize him on 45% of snaps, that's something that has to change moving forward. He needs to be in the game 55 to 60% of snaps at least. I know it's not a huge change, but it's enough, because there was one drive at the end of the first half where James Cook didn't even touch the field. It was all Latavius Murray. And I know sometimes he's asking to come out of the game because he's had a few plays in a row where he's been utilized, and that's, you know, part of the deal. The running back position, it can take a lot out of you. But at the same time, to have him sit on the sidelines for an entire drive is just not something that I think is sustainable to their overwhelming offensive success, and something that they need to rectify moving forward. So that's another way that I would try to attack the Cowboys defense, just because James Cook has been excellent and he needs to continue seeing more time on the field. All right. Zach writes in, are the Jets going to, I think there's a word missing, but give the Bills a bone and beat the reeling Dolphins? Reeling might not be the word I would look for there. The Jets will certainly play them difficult, because they know that their defense has to be the thing that pushes them forward. As long as the Bills get one thing to go their way with the Dolphins over the Dolphins' final or the next 3 games, then they're setting themselves up for a pretty nice out. you know, of course, the Bills have to take care of business. They would need to beat the Cowboys. They would need to beat the Chargers. And that doesn't look all that daunting after the Raiders just put up 63 on the Easton Stick-led Chargers last night. And then a home game against the Patriots. And odds are that's going to be not that difficult of a matchup for the Bills to take home either. So the Cowboys game, this is a huge one because you can work yourself into a thought process where the Bills will win their next two. It looks pretty likely that they'll win their next two. And if they beat the Cowboys, then that puts them at a 10-6 record heading into the final week of the season. And should the Dolphins lose just once, thanks to their late game, or the Titans' late game heroics, that means the Bills are effectively playing for a home playoff game in week 18 of the season. So it doesn't have to be the Jets. I mean, the very team that the Bills are playing this weekend can also turn around and be their best friends next weekend because the Dolphins play the Cowboys. It's a home game for the Dolphins, but it's a Cowboys team that, if they lose to the Bills, would be pretty eager to not allow this thing to get to a two-game losing streak. Then after that, the Dolphins are on the road against the Baltimore Ravens. So there are a few outs here, even if it's not the Jets. And the Jets, I think, should play them tough. They got embarrassed a few weeks ago, 34-13. The Jets were at home in that one against the Dolphins. So there may be some designs on trying to not only get themselves just in the hunt of the playoffs, but to get some of their respect back from that game. So I doubt that the Jets will win that game, but the AFC East discussion of this entire picture is pretty intriguing because if the Bills wind up beating the Cowboys, and it's going to be a tough game, don't get me wrong, and we'll get to the prediction later in the show, but if they are able to do that, then if they wind up 11-6 after all of this with a home playoff game, at least one home playoff game, it's a ridiculous path to get to that point, but the Bills would basically be right where people thought they would be all along. And they are still a good team. I mean, it's not as though they're 7-6, and I don't view them as the same caliber as a lot of the other teams vying for the wild card, the three wild card spots right now. Like, I think the Bills can win head to head against most of the, if not all of the 8-5 and 7-6 teams in that wild card cluster as currently constructed head to head. Bills are a talented team. They've squandered a bunch of games this year that they shouldn't have. And that's on them. But they seem to be moving it forward here. So if I had to guess, I don't think the Jets will do the Bills a favor, but the Bills can do themselves a favor by ticking off the Cowboys enough to go down to Miami and win next week. So to be determined there. All right. Ashraf writes in, how serious is Micah Hyde's injury, career ending, or will we see him again this year? The Bills did not indicate one way or another if his if he was going to be on injured reserve. It's not something that Sean McDermott ruled out. I asked McDermott on Wednesday, I believe, if injured reserve was a possibility for either AJ Epenesa or Micah Hyde, and they said they didn't know at this point, and they're still gathering information. So for Hyde, it's a scary thing because he's up there in his career, just had neck surgery. He has had more than one stinger. It's a scary thing, especially when you are at the end of the career, and you know this might be it for Micah Hyde. So maybe there's some emphasis on him trying to push forward. maybe there's some, maybe there's him wanting to be smart about it. It's a difficult road. So no, I don't know as of right now how serious that Micah Hyde injury is. It has been described as week to week. The Bills are very happy that they have Taylor Rapp, even though Rapp has just been below average this year. It's still experience and a bit more trust in what's going on in the back end than what they would have had at any point last year whenever Jordan Poyer or Micah Hyde went down with an injury. So yeah, to be determined on that as well. I don't mean to dodge the question. It's just we don't have enough information on Micah Hyde's injury just yet. And the definite past of what he has gone through is certainly something to be mindful of when talking about whether or not this is going to extend into an injured reserve stint or anything like that. So maybe it's a case that, hey, they do put him on injured reserve. That's a four-game thing. It takes him out the rest of the regular season. But if he gets the rest he needs, then it could be a, if they make it to the playoffs thing again, then that's when Micah Hyde can get back into it. But still very premature. I'm sure we'll find out by Saturday at 4 p.m. when the Bills would have to make that move as to whether or not Micah Hyde will, if they view that to be a more than 1 to 3 week injury. So we will see. Justin writes, using the playoff machine, the Bills could win out and finish anywhere from out of the playoffs to getting the one seed. Are they more dangerous as a high seed or being an underdog? I think I'll choose underdog for that because, and it's, you know, part of me just hates it because it's super cliche and I don't necessarily love cliches in sports, but there, I've been saying this probably for 4 or 5 years now. There is something about this locker room and something about just the way that their overall mindset works that when they get discredited or backed into a corner and things like that, that seems to be when they wind up being their best. And again, like I said, it is super cliche, but they love the disrespect. They thrive on the disrespect because a lot of these guys, not all of them, but a lot of these guys on the roster have had to go through some bits of adversity throughout their careers to where maybe they weren't well thought of in terms of being a good starter in the league or, you know, just coming from previous stops to where it wasn't always easy for them. That permeates throughout the locker room. And even though it's a different team, there's a lot of the same personalities from when those, you know, back against the wall teams were really going here in Buffalo to where it can carry over. So I think the answer to that question is the underdog thing. But I don't think that necessarily precludes them from sneaking in and winning the AFC East, because at that point, and I wouldn't anticipate they get the top seed. That I'm guessing it would still probably be a Baltimore or Kansas City situation that gets the top seed. But that said, a home playoff game and that mentality that we're talking about, because they are effectively looking at this as a every week make or break sort of situation. And we have talked a lot collectively about the 2021 season and trying to see parallels within that. And they're right at the same mark that they were last year. It was a little bit of a different timing. Like the Eagles loss happened to make them 6-6, whereas the Tampa Bay loss happened to make them to take them down from 7-5 to 7-6. And then the Bills this time around won a game to get them to 7-6. But it's still, they're at the same spot to where it seems like they've woken up. They're finding different ways to win. They're right there in these games with really good teams. There's a shot that they rattle off a bunch of wins in a row here to end the season, especially with the schedule, at least half of it, looking conducive to do so. Cowboys game is going to be tough. Dolphins game is going to be tough. But the back against the wall thing is very, very real within the Bills organization. And so I'll go with the underdog thing just because I've seen that from them before. I've seen them be favorites and I've seen them be underdogs, and they are much more of a dangerous team when they are, when they think they are underdogs, even if they aren't actually underdogs. So we shall see. Kevin writes in, do you think Kaiir Elam can be moved? Well, it depends on what you're trying to get in return for him. Now, the Bills do have one thing working in the favor to keep Kaiir Elam next year, and that would be that Dane Jackson is once again a free agent. And whether or not he comes back, I'm sure they would like to have him back, but I would tend to think that his price tag probably goes up a little bit, because not only can he be someone you can start, but he's also shown some ability on special teams, and that's going to be valuable to someone else out there looking for a player that can be a fringe starter on the team. So the Bills will probably need to be competitive on their offer, but not an outright guarantee that they would lose him. But if they do, they would still have Rasul Douglas under contract. They would still have Christian Benford under contract. Tre'Davious White is under contract, but who the heck knows what's going to happen with him? You know, there is a chance that White, who suffered an Achilles injury, I believe it was week 4, it was the Miami game, but at the end of September, there is a chance that he might not be the same player again. And that's usually, well, not usually, but it can be a full year of rehab. And then you see a lot of players who rely on speed and explosiveness and everything like that who suffer an Achilles injury where they aren't quite the same after the fact. Complicating the matters is that Tre'Davious White is at a point in his contract where the Bills could move on and save about $10 million on the 2024 cap. Even more if they designated a post June 1st exemption. So that's a big time decision that they're going to need to make. And how much they want to stand by Tre'Davious White, and whether or not it's going to be worth it. So why does that impact Kaiir Elam? Simple numbers. Because if they don't think Tre'Davious White is a part of their team moving forward, then they would probably move on. Or they would probably have to keep Kaiir Elam. If Tre'Davious White isn't going to be ready, then they would probably need to keep Kaiir Elam if Dane Jackson doesn't return. And also, here's the point. What are you getting for Kaiir Elam at this point? The team that drafted him deems him largely unplayable. Passed by a player that was drafted 4 rounds later in the same draft, and by a player that they drafted him to basically replace in the starting lineup in Dane Jackson. And they felt compelled enough to go out and trade for another cornerback in Rasul Douglas, who is under contract next year. So what is his value? Is it like a late round pick swap? Because that's kind of what it's looking like right now. That's a bit of the reason why in the spring, when they were going through their OTAs and mandatory minicamp, I, as I do around that time each year, I'll put together a potential late summer trade candidates piece. And Kyir Elam was one of those pieces because it was pretty clear in the spring that he might have had a tough, he could have potentially a tough time in seeing the field. And if that was ever the case, if he wound up even coming close to fourth on the depth chart, that's a spot where that window to trade him for something worthwhile was right then and there in the summer. Now it's passed. He's been a healthy scratch more often than he's been active. He's been on injured reserve. They just don't trust him enough. And he doesn't play special teams all that much. It's a spot where you have to figure out if it's best to just cut bait and trade him for a late round pick swap or something like a sixth round pick straight up. Or do you just keep him and try to rehab his value a little bit and get, might be more valuable to you to keep him as opposed to trade him just for something that probably won't matter to the long term of your roster anyway. Very difficult, but that's what happens when you miss on a first round pick. Okay. Next question comes from Marty O, who writes in, Joe, punting has been a mess this season to the point that it's severely affected games. Is there any hope for improvement? More important, how long can you contain your excitement at the prospects of a 2024 Puntapalooza? Marty, I know you have been a reader and a listener for a long time here. Y'all know me. Puntapalooza is going to be back in 2024. I feel pretty confident in that. Sam Martin has just been okay. He's got a contract that takes him through the 2025 season, but that's going to be one of those where I think they restructure it, maybe chop off a year and lower the guarantees in 2024, basically to say, okay, we like you, Sam, but and we want to give you a chance to win the job this year, but at the same time, there needs to be improvement. So I don't know if it's they draft a punter late, or maybe they just sign a rookie free agent punter. But I'm with you. I think there have been times where he has misfired to the point where it has put the punt coverage in a difficult spot to bring down the returner. And that can't continue. So yeah, I am fully anticipating a Puntapalooza in 2024, unless something dramatically changes over the last four games here. And we will see if there will be a new punter. But the one thing that I am pretty confident in is that there will be hang time tracking in the spring and summer of 2024 from yours truly. Chad writes, will Tyler Bass end up being the only member of the 2020 draft class on the team next year? Seems like AJ Epenesa has played his way into a better contract than they can fit under the cap, and you addressed the Gabe Davis pros and cons this week. I think there is a legitimate possibility that happens, Chad. The frustration about Gabe Davis's production should be there from a Bills perspective. And, you know, one game where you get shut out, that's going to happen every once in a while. But for it to happen, three out of his last five games, and then out of his last seven games, mixing in a fourth in there where he had one catch for 6 yards, that is borderline unacceptable stuff. Now, we also know that Gabe Davis is a bit of a feast or famine guy, and if he gets a good matchup against some zone coverage where he can uncover a lot more easily than if he were to be going up against man-to-man, then that is where you see some of these big-time performances from him. And he's excellent when things break down, Josh Allen breaks the pocket, and he has to improvise a bit. he has been doing really well in that area since his rookie season. But if you are not winning consistently in man-to-man coverage, not separating well enough, and you aren't winning contested catches without that separation, when you are given ample opportunities to do so, it really challenges the stance to continue putting him out there past the season in a large snap role. But they love Gabe Davis. They love the thought of Gabe Davis. They love the hypothetical of Gabe Davis, that he is this really great run blocker who can play a high percentage of snaps. He can disguise things for you, and then he can chip in some big, high ceiling games. But when the ceiling and floor are just such a large disparity from one another, what do you pay that player? He's great in the locker room. They love him in the locker room. Stephon Diggs loves him. But if and when Stephon Diggs either gets injured or starts to see his productivity decrease because he is now officially in his 30s. And I do believe that Diggs has the type of game that ages gracefully in terms of route running, how he separates, everything like that. And he's not really that yards after the catch guy anyway. He can still be really effective over the next 2-3 seasons, I think, before we start to see a legit downturn. But Diggs has also been remarkably healthy for the Bills since he has arrived. What happens if Diggs misses time and Gabe Davis is the number one? Where does this offense turn? Because if Davis is not winning on routes, he's not winning at the catch point when there's another player in there, even though he's a bigger body. Are you just running 12 personnel every single play and hoping for the best from Dalton Kincaid? I think their wide receiver has been definitely percolating as one of the areas that I think has become a stronger need as the season has gone on. Because as the inconsistencies of Davis as a pass catcher have continued along, it takes away the emphasis to pay him. So definitely complex negotiation, because the Bills do really like Gabe Davis. They like the thought of Gabe Davis. But will the thought of Gabe Davis ever meet the reality of what he is as a player? And how much is that worth? That's why it's so complex. So I'm probably on the move the train along mindset with him, unless it's a really good deal. And certainly, you know, that would lend itself to taking advantage of what looks to be a pretty strong wide receiver draft class this year. But no doubt there are going to be some, I don't know, maybe emotions is the wrong word, but some lingering thoughts about Davis, just because he has been a hit for them for the most part for a fourth round pick to be able to come through and be a 2-year starter and be an impact player earlier in his career. That's a big thing, but are you paying for the past, or are you paying what he's about to become? And that's why I ultimately land on moving on. Epinesa, I'm with you. I think he probably priced himself out. I do think he has some deficiencies on edge contain. I think that's something that teams have picked on him a few times this season that has kind of gone under the radar. The Eagles did it a couple of times, including the game winner in overtime. But that said, his ability to bat a pass and the better pass rushing he has shown this year in limited opportunities, I think some team will look at that, see his age, and think to themselves, all right, the best is yet to come here. A lot of times, players that show a hint of being a producer as a pass rusher right at the end of their rookie contracts, those guys usually wind up getting a nice little deal. So I think that there is a very solid chance that Tyler Bass will end up being the only 2020 draft pick remaining after this year. But all depends on their valuation of Gabe Davis, Gabe Davis's valuation of himself, and if the Bills feel like they can get better by freshening up the wide receiver room a little bit. All right, we've got time for one or two more throughout the show before I get to the prediction portion. Todd writes, two defensive personnel questions. How much drop-off at the safety position with Hyde out? And are you surprised by Tyrell Dodson's production? He seems to be playing well. I think there is a drop-off from Micah Hyde to Taylor Rapp just because I think some of the instincts and positioning that you get from Micah Hyde, even though it hasn't been his best season, it has probably been his worst season as a Bill, but that's to be expected when you start to age a little bit. But his know-how of being where he needs to be and playing hunches, I think they are definitely going to miss that because I've seen a few times this year where Rapp has just been kind of lost out there. And Rapp is more of a physical player, likes to put his shoulder down and tackle and all of that. I don't know if he's great as that free safety type when they need him to be that single high. I don't think he plays hunches as well as Micah Hyde, but, a definite upgrade because of his experience rather than putting a Cam Lewis or a DeMar Hamlin out there in that case. As for Dodson, I think with him, it's because they have localized his role enough to where they're not putting himself in a spot to fail. There are times he gets taken advantage of, don't get me wrong, because he is very much looking to defend the run and stop the run on most plays. And if it's play action, he can find himself very close to the line of scrimmage and needing to hurry to get himself back in position. And that's kind of been his thing. But taking him out on obvious passing downs and putting in a third safety, I think has definitely benefited Dodson, to where you don't see his weaknesses as much. Now, they are missing a hefty amount of athleticism at the position, I think, that Dorian Williams could provide. But at the same time, they're substituting that athleticism and that raw talent for someone who knows the system and has been there since 2019. Dodson does have his beats in coverage, even on the non-obvious passing downs. And he can also find himself, even on running downs, to get so far up that he takes himself out of the play. And then a bigger gain could be had. But he's done a mostly nice job since being instituted in the lineup. Hasn't been like good or great or anything like that. It's been average to slightly below average, and I think they would take that rather than being the worst player on the field each and every week. So, yeah, he has done a nice job to kind of steady the ship, but long-term, I think Dorian Williams should be the consideration in this spot if Milano's injured again. Okay, final question comes from Eric, who writes, is this the week Josh breaks his interception streak? It would be a hell of a week to do it, Eric, because going up against a couple of corners who are pretty good, Deron Bland having 8 interceptions total, and of course, Stephon Gilmore, who Bills fans know pretty well to be a really good player and has been for a long time, even though he's probably near the end of his career at this point. I'll say that the interception streak continues only because the potential Micah Parsons versus Spencer Brown matchup, I think, will have an impact at some point in the game. And even if it's not for a sack, but if it's hurrying a throw and hurrying Josh to make a decision where he doesn't see where all the defenders are, that's been kind of how it has happened for Josh Allen this year. So from that perspective, I think they'll give a lot of help to Spencer Brown when Micah Parsons does line up against him. But eventually, I think that matchup will lend itself to forcing a turnover of some kind. But, you know, that's kind of a in the weeds hypothetical, but I love those questions. So I'll say it continues, but I think it'll only be one interception if I had to guess. All right. Now it's time for the Shaq Lawson Meditation Prediction Hour. The Bills are favorites in this game, 2-point favorites over the Cowboys. The total on the game has gone down since I last checked it. It is at 50.5. So I will take the Bills to win this game outright. And I'm actually taking a push of the spread because I think 2 points is kind of perfect. I would not be surprised if this winds up being a last second field goal to win it game for the Bills. The Cowboys are damn good. The Bills have been playing really well. I think they can do a nice enough job against CeeDee Lamb, especially with the presence of Rasul Douglas and how Christian Benford has definitely upped his game since he has returned to the lineup. And, you know, just because they're not usually in man-to-man coverage, it's more of a sum is greater than the whole of its parts kind of style pass coverage. And I think that will help against a guy like CeeDee Lamb. I mean, they're not going to stop him. But that's the Cowboys' best means of moving the ball down the field consistently. Because Brandon Cooks has been fine this year. It's been inconsistent. Michael Gallup, same thing. Jake Ferguson, their tight end, has been pretty solid. But the Bills have done a nice job in limiting tight ends in the past. So I think the matchup works itself to where I believe they can force some stops against a high-powered Dallas defense. But to think that they're going to hold them below 20, I think it's just not going to happen. So then it ultimately falls on the offense. And should Diggs get the Gilmore matchup in a one-on-one situation, that is one I think the Bills can win. And I think they're will and should be an emphasis this week to get Diggs reintegrated in a much bigger way than he has been in previous weeks. So whether or not they can do that, whether or not James Cook can keep it going, that's to be determined. But I'm taking the Bills to win this game. I'm taking a push. You know, that's kind of a call your shot sort of thing, but I'm taking a push, and then I'm slightly taking the under. Basically, my final score prediction on my article over at The Athletic when it posts will be the Bills winning by a 26-24 score with thinking of a last-minute Tyler Bass field goal to win it. So that is where my brain is for this game. All right, so that's going to do it for me. I need to now get over to One Bills Drive and hear what the head coach has to say, whether or not they're going to make any IR moves, anything like that. So if that dates the Micah Hyde portion, I apologize. But that is this weekend should be a pretty fun one altogether. So the Bills take on the Cowboys at Highmark Stadium in Orchard Park. in a game that should be pretty close and one that's going to have a lot of eyes on it because it's the only one in the 425 window. So it expects some fun in that one. All right. So thank you all for listening to this Live Room episode. My name is Joe Biscaglia. You'll next hear from me after the Cowboys game, and we'll see if the Bills can keep this good stretch going and if they can put a little bit more pressure on everyone in the wildcard picture as well as the Miami Dolphins for the AFC East crowd. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. See you then.